There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dan Snow's History. Have I got a treat for you, everybody? Yes, I do. On the 7th of July, 1795, Private John Carbery joined the 2nd Royal Tyrone Militia. He then joined the 40th Regiment of Foot in the early 19th century. This was the start of a family association with Britain's military that remains to the present day. For generations following, we think it might be a world record. Please get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere you want. And let me know if you think your family has had over 200 years of continuous military service, as you'll hear in this remarkable podcast with his descendant, Paul Darren, who himself served in the 1980s. There are few conflicts and virtually not a decade in the intervening 200 years when a member of this remarkable family were not serving king or queen and country. I'm very grateful to Paul Darren for getting in touch with me and bringing this podcast to my attention. If you guys have got an amazing story, don't forget, get in touch on Twitter. I'm always on the lookout for new podcast topics, and this is one that came to me, and I'm absolutely thrilled that it did. Paul's family are going for a Guinness Book of Records entry. They're talking to the National Army Museum in London about some kind of recognition there as well. It really is, as you'll hear, completely extraordinary. Lots of the conflicts that Paul's family have been involved in feature in documentaries on History Hit TV. We've got a digital history channel. You go to History Hit TV. Now, we've had a deal on to get people through the lockdown. It looks like it might be extended. So if you now use the code, we've got an even better deal now. If you use the code POD3, P-O-D-3, this offer will be available for the next few days. You'll get a month for free, and then your first 3 months, just £1, euro or dollar. So this is now 4 months for just £3, euros or dollars in all. I mean, which is going to take us to the end of the lockdown, I think, I hope. So please, head over to History Hit TV and use the code POD3. Enjoy this podcast about Paul's illustrious family. And please get in touch if you think you've got an even longer record of service. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Now, you've got, I mean, tell me, it's got to be, do you think your family are a record? How many generations back have you traced?
There's eight, I'm the ninth, so is continuously, so that's every decade from 1794 up to me. We're missing in the 1990s, but apart from that, every decade, every 10 years from 1794, my ancestors have been in uniform continuously.
Wow, so it's not only an unbroken chain of ancestors, but it's actually in terms of military service as well. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, military service, yeah. So it's eight monarchs continuously. So we've gone from George III all the way down to Elizabeth II.
Let's go all the way back. So who's the first one that you've managed to trace?
Well, it's two-sided, Dan, because you've got soldiers married to daughters of soldiers. So the earliest is 1794. That's my fourth great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather. He was in the Tyrone Militia. He comes from the town of Clogher in the county of Tyrone in Northern Ireland. And he joined the 2nd Tyrone Militia in 1794. Now, in 1798, there was the Irish Rebellion. So he then was involved at the Battle of Vinegar Hill. And then with the Napoleonic Wars in 1808, the 7th of February 1808, they were called upon to enlist into the regular regiments of the British Army, and he went into the 40th Regiment of Foot.
And what was his name? Let's give him a name.
His name's John Carberry, yeah, Private John Carberry.
And so where did he serve in the peninsula?
He went across with Wellington, which is Wellesley then, in 1808. He was at the Battle of all the battles from up to 1812. So that was Vimiera and Talavera. And then he was killed on the 19th of March. He was defending, he was a grenadier. So, you know, he was one of the tallest lads. And he was defending the earthworks around Badajoz. And the French attacked. And he was killed in that action. And then he had a son. His son followed on from there on in February, actually.
All right, so that's the siege of Badajoz. That was a brutal, bloody siege. Okay, so the next generation. Tell me about them.
So his son joined in on the 20. We believe on his Waterloo records it says the 1st of January 1809, but we've got his attestation of the 24th of February, which we believe is his birthday, on 24th of February 1812. He joined in Clogher again. Went to Hull. From Hull, he went down to Portsmouth, went across, and he was in the Battle of Victoria, 1813, the Battle of San Sebastian. He was wounded at the Battle of San Sebastian, the storming of San Sebastian. He spent 109 days in the regimental hospital. It kept him out of the next few battles, and he was at the capture of Bayonne on the 14th of April 1814. He then came back to England, was discharged because of the wounds, we believe, but then he re-enlisted when Napoleon came back for his 100 days. He enlisted into the 40th, the 2nd Battalion, transferred to the 1st Battalion, went over with Major Hayland, and was at Waterloo. He then went from there, occupation of Paris, Glasgow, where he had his first son, Ireland, and then on in August of 1823, he sailed on HMS Castle Forbes, a guard on a convict ship, to New South Wales. Then from New South Wales, he then went on HMS Cumberland to Tasmania, and he was in Tasmania from 1825 to 1829, when the regiment was then moved to India. He was in India. He died of disease in 1835 in just outside Bombay.
Right, so he saw a huge amount of action. And who's so the next one?
The next one is, well, the next one is that he had a few children. He had a son, which is my great great uncle, and he followed it. He joined the army at 13 in the same regiment, the 40th Regiment of Foot, in India, in Poonar, in India. The year later, on the 22nd of November, he then went into as a man soldier, as a private. He was at the capture of Karachi, the first Afghan war, Battle of Maharajapur, and he went all the way to came back, went to India, and he died of disease in Ireland, in Dublin, Richmond Barracks, he was a Sergeant John Carberry, in 1849. Now John Carberry was at Waterloo. His daughter married my third great-grandfather, and that's where the lines join. So my third great-grandfather was Joseph Darren, the same name as me, and his father was joined the Marines in the 19th of December 1811. He was a whitesmith by trade. In January 1812, he was on board HMS Prince of Wales, the second-rate 98 gun, and was with. They sailed to the Mediterranean with HMS Caledonia, HMS Boyne, under Sir Edward Pellew. He was at Port Mahon, and then they were. They stormed the fortress of Cassis in 1813, and he was in the capture of Geneva. He came back, he was on the ship for 2.5 years, 2 years, 6 months, came back on shore, And with the reduction of the army in 1814, because he was a whitesmith, he stayed behind and became the armourer of the 1st Division Royal Marines. He taught his son that trade, and his son, in 1840, joined the 40th Regiment of Foot.
Okay, so his son joined his grandfather's regiment.
No. So his son is Joseph Darren. So you've got... this is where it's confusing. So you've got Mary Ann Carbery, who's the Carberys that came down from Waterloo. They were in India. They were in the 40th as well.
Yeah, so his son joined the same regiment that her dad had been in. Yeah, so keeping it all in the family. All right, so tell me about, what's the son called now?
So the son's called Joseph Darren. So you've got Marine Sergeant Joseph Darren, who was the 1st Division Royal Marines that stormed the fortress of Cassis. He taught his son to be an armourer because it was his only son. His other two children had died. So as the armourer of the 1st Division Royal Marines, from a young age, he taught his son to be an armourer. So in 1840, his son joins the army into the 40th Regiment of Foot. And on the 16th of May, 1840, he's sent to India on HMS Dartmouth. He arrives in September. He's then... with my great uncle, so you've got Joseph Darren and John Carbery, both sergeants, one armour sergeant, one sergeant. They go into Afghanistan, first Afghan war, Battle of Maharajapur. So the daughter of John Carbery marries Joseph Darren in India, in Murat, in 1843. And they stay. So that generation comes down. So they join the two families join together, the Carberys and the Darrens join together by marriage. From there, They come back to England. They go to Ireland in 1847. In 1852, Joseph Darren and Mary Ann Carbery, with their children, go to sail on HMS Falcon to New South Wales. No, Victoria, actually, to Victoria with the discovery of the gold in Ballarat. And he's in charge of... he's literally in charge of quartering the troops. And then he's put in charge of public works of building Victoria Barracks. So the 40th built D block of Victoria Barracks. And he was actually in charge of, maybe because he was an armourer, maybe because he used a forge, I don't know why, but he was actually put in, it's actually in the Victoria Gazette, he's put into in charge of building Victoria Barracks. In 1860, they moved to New Zealand for the Second Māori War, and he's in the Second Māori War. In 1862, he leaves. Now, he had a son, which is my second great-grandfather, and he joins a completely different regiment.
Okay, he's branching out now.
And so he branches out. So he goes into the 3rd East Kents. He's in militia before that. He's down in Somerset. And he joins the Somerset Light Infantry Militia in the 1870s. And then in the 1880s, 1887, he goes into the 3rd East Kents, and he's stationed down in Canterbury. And he doesn't go overseas. He's been overseas with his father all of his life, but he doesn't go overseas. He's a sergeant, and he literally trains. He's in E Company. The 3rd East Kents. So that's my second great-grandfather, and he's the only one that stays, even though he travelled the world with his father, he's the only one that didn't see any action or didn't see any service.
Okay, so he's a one-off, he's an outlier.
He served, but he did quite well. He went up in the ranks really fast, but he stayed at home. But he had a son, which is my great-grandfather. And my great-grandfather first joins the 3rd East Kents in 1889. He joins his dad's regiment, but transfers to the newly formed Army Service Corps, which was formed in... he joins in March 1899. I think they would only... Because the Army Service Corps was changed from the Wagoners to... and he was actually formed into what was then the Army Service Corps. He was good with horses for some reason. I don't know if it's all related to a forge, blacksmiths, horses, I don't know. But he then goes into the Army Service Corps, and in 1900, he goes to South Africa on SS Persia with the Army Service Corps, and he's attached as a driver because they're short of drivers. He's attached to the 13th Royal Field Artillery, and he fights the actions in South Africa, which is a Battle of Landsknecht. He's with Buller. He's with Buller most of the time, all the way up to Landsknecht, and then when the 13th Field Regiment get posted to India, he goes back to the Army Service Corps, and he stays there to February 1902, and then he stays in the regular army.
You know, SS Persia, I've got a feeling that it was a very famous ship that was sunk during the First World War, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. I think you're right, Dan. When I was going through the embarkation returns and stuff, and I was looking at the ship, I believe it was. Yeah, I do believe so.
There's some mad story around the woman who's on the front of the Rolls Royce was either on it or was saved from it or died on it. Anyway, I'll have to look that one up. So he comes back in one piece from the Boer War.
He does, indeed, yeah. He gets his second good conduct stripe there. He does really well. And then in 1914, when the war starts, in 1915, he's attached to the Royal Naval Division, a 279 company, Army Service Corps, attached to the Royal Naval Division, and they sail on SS Minnetonka to Egypt. From there, he goes on to Gallipoli. He's 42 when he's on Gallipoli. He gets his third good conduct stripe as well. He's on Gallipoli. He then comes back after Gallipoli. He's back in Egypt, and he's transferred to the 53rd Welsh Division. And then he's attached to the Camel Brigade for a while, for 4 months. And then from there, he goes back to the 53rd Division, and he's attached to the 1st of the 1st, the Royal Welsh Field Ambulance, as a driver. He goes in the Palestine campaign. So he goes all the way through the Palestine campaign of 1917, and then he gets malaria in 1918, in October 1918. He's actually in a field hospital in Jerusalem. And then he comes back in 1919. He's back here. He leaves the army in August, the 26th of August 1919, and retires. I think he did something in the Second World War, because he has another medal. He has the Defence Medal for some reason. We don't know what that's for, though. We're really trying to find out what that's for.
Oh, if you find out, let me know. That's an extraordinary career. Boer War, First World War, and Second World War. Anyone let me know. Tweet me or send me an email if anyone can find anyone who served in all three, has medals from all three conflicts. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, we've got everything. We've actually got all the documentation, all the photographs. We've got hundreds of these postcards that go back hundreds of years. Not hundreds of years, 100 years, before 1900. We don't know where. It's just a whole stack of these postcards, nothing written on them. And they're all from, we've got some from Aqaba, you know, some from Egypt, some from all over the place. And they're all originals. So Arthur Joseph Darren, that's my great-grandfather. So he had three sons. So the first son is my great-uncle, and he's Arthur Richard. And he joins Ganges, HMS Ganges, in 1909 as a boy. And he serves, he's 2 years in Ganges and another 12 years in as a naval seaman all the way through. And he's at the Battle of Dogger Bank. And at the end of the war, he's actually, I've got photographs of him because he goes to the Mediterranean, and on the ship he's on, HMS Humber, he's blockading Aqaba, after Aqaba's been captured, of course. And then there's a photograph, he sees his father, and there's a photo of them, both of them together. So his father's in the army and his son's in the navy, and they have a photograph together. And he's in, after that, he's sent to the Baltic Sea at the Russian Revolution. So there's stories that we've got that they rescued a part of the Russian royal family. They took it off, I think it's in Latvia, they took him off on a ship. So that's my great uncle. Then you've got my grandfather. The fathers of the fathers, they don't stop their children joining the army. So my grandfather, who joined the army in 15, lied about his age, said he was 17, joined a territorial regiment, which is the 6th Battalion, the Middlesex. So when he gets to 16, he enlists into the 1st Battalion Royal Welsh Fusiliers, because my grandmother is Welsh. My great-grandmother is Welsh. So he joins the 1st Battalion Royal Welsh Fusiliers. And then he goes to Ireland, Malta, comes back, and then he's in, they're attached to the 7th Division. And he's at the First Battle of Ypres, and he's wounded and captured at Ypres, sent to a prison camp at an awful time. The camp they sent him to first, he was forced into coal mines, and they were regular army, so they were being a bit stubborn and they refused to go in. So they were kept in the cold, literally made to stand in the freezing cold. And then someone told him it was warmer underground, so that's the story that we've got. So he was down a mine, and then there was one German guard who was picking on another soldier, and he defended him, and he got his face bashed in. Half of his face was scarred where the German guard beat him. He came back in the 2nd of December 1918, stayed into the Royal Welsh Fusiliers till 23, and then joins the TA in 24, the 6th Battalion Essex, stays with the 6th Battalion Essex all the way through the interwar years, up to 38, and then called to full-time military service. And he's the 6th Battalion, the Essex, becomes a searchlight regiment. So he's with that, and then there's an incident in 1940, he gets put on his records, it gets burnt really bad, we don't know why. He's up in Norfolk, but he gets burnt extremely badly. And then he's put in hospital. When he comes out, he's transferred to the 4th Light Aircraft, and he stays there all the way through the war. So he leaves. He joins in 1911, and he leaves in June 1945. And then there's my youngest boy, the great uncle. He's got one of the most interesting. He joins the Navy, Ganges, 1918, February 1918, and he goes all the way through. And then in the early 20s, he goes to HMS Dolphin and becomes on submarines. So he's on the L-16, the H-49, the L-16, the L-18. He's on the Repulse and on the World Tour of 1923. And then the Second World War comes. He's on Brilliant at Dunkirk, HMS Brilliant, which we've got photographs of him on there. And then in 42, he's put on HMS Poppy, and he's at PQ-17, and then he's at Normandy with the Royal Navy there, Uncle Charlie Darren, and he leaves in 45, ends up working for Shell, goes to America, lives in his older years. He died in 2000, Dan. 98 years of age. They all lived to a long. They all lived to an old age. There's not one of them that dies young. They all lived to a very long age.
How did Hitler's sexuality shape his worldview? Why did the Black Death lead to the rise of the witch trials? And what are some of the sauciest scandals involving kings and queens at Hampton Court? I don't know about you, but this is the history I want to hear about. If you do too, then join me, Kate Lister, every Tuesday and Friday to find out the answers to all of these questions and more. Listen to Betwixt the Sheets, the History of Sex Scandal in Society, wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by History Hit.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. And also remember, when you use messaging apps, They shrink the photos. You cannot print those out. You cannot blow them up. This is high quality imagery going to one of the most important people in your life. The Aura app is super easy to set up. It takes about 2 minutes and you're going to love it. There's free unlimited storage. Add unlimited photos and videos and invite as many people as you want to a frame. Right now, Aura has got a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code DANSNOW at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. All right, let's get to your dad.
So it's my uncle's, not my dad. It's my uncle's because I'm the son. My mum, my father left when I was two, so I'm the grandson of Frederick George Darren, which is the one who served in. I've got my grandfather's name, my mum's name. My father left when I was 2 years of age, and we didn't see him. And I was brought up. See, all these stories, I was taught by the women of the family, not the men. I was taught by the women. It was the women that told me. I was 8 years of age and my aunt was ill and she had to stay in the house and I used to have to take shopping round for her every day after school and she'd give me a slice of Swiss roll and there was photographs on the wall of my grandfather. She would tell me all these stories about India, about the Boer War. And that's how I first started learning about all this. And it was after I went into the army at 17, when I came out, she died a year later. She was really, she was more ill than I knew. I was only a kid, so I didn't know. But the story stuck with me. And it was because of that, that when I came out of the army, I decided to research the whole of the family.
So wait, we got that, but your uncles, they were after the war, were they?
No. You could say, I suppose, it's near the end of the war. My uncle Arthur Joseph Darren, he went in April 45. He was sent to Egypt. He was with the 51st Training Regiment, RA. He was on self-propelled guns, and then he was sent to the Meds in end of 45 to guard, which is ironic really, to guard Africa Corps, prisoner of war. So his father was a prisoner of war to the Germans and his son was guarding German prisoner of war. And then his job was to transport, they were transporting them to through Palestine to what is Tel Aviv and then across to Cyprus to build the camps there, you know, because you've got the Jewish refugees coming from they built the camps on Cyprus. And he was actually in Israel when it was created. He actually, in 1947, he was actually there when it was. He was a sergeant as well, and he came out. And then my other uncle, he didn't have a very interesting, he was a corporal, he was a batman through an officer. And he spent 3 years only. And then my cousin, their son, my cousin, joined the army in 1966. And he was just stationed at Salisbury. He came out in 71. And I joined in 80, the 4th of November 1980, because of the influence of the family. And then I went to Germany. I was in Canada, mainly Cold War, they call it now, don't they? So, I didn't have a very exciting career, but I did 6 years. I came out, then I went on reserve, and then I went back again in 2012 as an instructor in London District, and I taught until 16. I have diabetes now, Dan, so I couldn't, and I was getting older.
And yeah, no, it happens to all of us, buddy. And I've got to ask, what is there another generation behind you?
There could be, yeah. We have a nephew, a boy. He came down to, because, you know, Who Do You Think You Are did the magazine. I took him to the photo shoot. He's joining cadets. He's coming of age in December of 12, and he's itching to join cadets. He's really itching. So he knows the family, and he's the only one to actually. My son as Crohn's disease, so there's no way he can join, and he's studying at Brighton University. My daughter works for the courts, so there is always a one member that pops up that's itching to do it.
You know, we hear a lot about the effect of combat, of service. It can lead to mental health problems. It can lead to positive mental health outcomes. In your family, when people were talking about it, did all these people, were they all glad that they'd served, or did some of them regret it, some of them bad experiences?
No. Looking through the records, I found with my third great-grandfather, when he came out of after the Maori War, on his records it says he has palpitations of the heart from long service. And he has, they said he has heart problems, but he lived to 1899. So me and my cousins would go, we believed he had post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, he was at the Battle of Maharajpur. That was a frontal attack. He was in the First Afghan War. They marched miles. They never had the transport that they have today, you know, and he lived to 1899. Now, if he had an heart disease in the 1860s, I don't believe he would have lived all the way to 1899. We believe that he had some form of post-traumatic stress disorder with the palpitations, exhaustion, literally. And same with my grandfather. My grandfather was the most kindest individual. He never ate his children, but I think my nan bought some black bread one day in the 1930s, and she had it on the table, and he threw it through the window. He'd never been angry. He didn't eat his children. He wasn't violent to his children, but he wouldn't eat black bread because as a prisoner of war, he was given porridge made of grass, coffee made of acorns, and black bread. And he just couldn't. I don't know if it brought back memories or what, but that was the only time he actually got aggressive in that. But there's, you know, with fully aware of, you know, I've sat down, my cousin's putting a book together with this. He's a grammar school boy, his literacy is absolutely fabulous. So I've been doing the research, and we've been going down to Kew quite a lot, and the British Library to the Oriental Indian Office, and getting all the documents together and putting it together.
So each generation will tell the next ones that it's worth doing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's so much when we're told stories, we're told stories in a way of, you know, my greatest grandfather, the one that was a Marine, couldn't read or write. It was the army it was the Royal Marines that taught his son to read. It was the Royal Marines that gave him a pension before pensions were even out into civilians. You know, the education system in the army. All my grandfathers going back went to school, army school, and their children were educated. So there's the downside of the wars, you know, the suffering that goes. But there's also the other side of it is the army looked after our family and educated the children. Every single one, nearly every single birth in my family is an army chaplain return. They all were baptised by army chaplains within the regimental records. When you go online and you look up our names, Carberry's and Darren's, there's just rows of children born of army chaplain returns all around the world. We have no, when people say to me, where does your family come from, Dan? They say, what county do they come from or what part of Britain? It's really hard to answer because they were born in Tasmania, they were born in India, they were born all over the place. They wasn't in one county. We haven't got a fixed borough for where we are. Not an East End, we're not East Enders, and we're not Northerners, we're not Welsh, and we're not Scottish. We just have moved around so much that we're just British, really. We are British. We have no, you know, someone said to me, did you know, as a joke once, your family don't have a coat of arms, it just has battle honours, just as a crack. You know, we was in one regiment from 1808 until 1862. That's a long time.
Well, when the book comes out, let me know and I'll make sure all the people on the podcast hear of it. And thank you for sharing that extraordinary story. And if there's anyone listening to this that thinks they can match that, I will definitely have them on the podcast. That is remarkable. And yeah, let us know what that little nephew of yours decides to do.
Well, he's itching. He's a bit scared. He is a bit scared. It's a bit like I was. I was a bit scared. You know, it's a bit like the opening scene of The Four Feathers. You know, when you're walking up the young lad's walking up the stairs and there's all his ancestors behind him, and it's like, am I gonna be good enough, sort of thing. And he said that to me already, actually. You know, I'm a bit. But once you get in there, once you get into it, once you just follow orders and do as you're told and keep your kit clean and stuff, it's not that hard, really. It's a good crack. It's a good laugh. It's a good laugh.
So thank you very much for coming on the podcast, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
Hi, everyone. It's me, Dan Snow. Just a quick request. It's so annoying, and I hate it when other podcasts do this, but now I'm doing it, and I hate myself. Please, please go onto iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and give us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps, basically boosts up the chart, which is good, and then more people listen, which is nice. So if you could do that, I'd be very grateful. I understand if you don't want to subscribe to my TV channel. I understand if you don't want to buy my calendar, but this is free. Come on, do me a favour. Thanks. Thank you for listening to this episode of Dan Snow's History It. Please follow this show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us and you'll be doing us a big favour. Don't forget you can also listen to all of these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of TV documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe. As a special gift, you can also get your first 3 months for just £1 a month when you use code DANSNOW at checkout.